you for joining us on this special session of Open for Questions here at the White House. I'm Betsy Landers, National PTA President, here representing millions of dedicated child advocates working to improve the lives of children and families across this country and around the world. I'm honored today to be joined by Cecilia Munoz, Director of the White House Domestic Policy Council, who will be answering your questions live. In her role as Director of DPC, Cecilia coordinates the domestic making process for the White House, which includes policies to improve and fund education. But in perhaps her most important role, Cecilia is a mom to two beautiful daughters. Over the past 2 weeks, PTA members have been submitting their questions on education reform and policy via PTA.org and through Twitter. For those of you who haven't had an opportunity to submit your questions, or if additional questions come to you as we move along, please submit them via Twitter to hashtag WHPTA. But before we get to the questions, I want to thank you, Cecilia, for joining us today and agreeing to answer these questions live for all of our members.
Well, thank you so much, Betsy, for coming to the White House, for bringing so many of your colleagues here. We're so excited to have you here, and I'm personally excited to be part of this because, as you heard, the most important thing I do is be a mom, and I have just such tremendous respect and admiration and gratitude for what PTAs and their leaders do all around this country. It's an extraordinarily important role as being part of a school family, and as we all know, and I know because I work for a guy who has yet to miss a parent-teacher conference, parents play a tremendously important role without which we can't hope to be successful in making sure we meet our goals for our children's education in this country. And when the president talks about our educational goals, he's really talking about, obviously, what's the right thing for kids, what's the right thing for families. He's also thinking about what's right for us as a country, what's right for our economy, what's right for our future. And he has just a tremendous sense of urgency for what we have to accomplish in the education arena. That is a sense of urgency that is shared by the Secretary of Education, the wonderful Arne Duncan. I share it, and it's for me a tremendous honor to be part of the policymaking team that focuses on education and to do the work that we know is essential in partnership with parents, in partnership with teachers, in partnership with school systems and state leaders all around the country to make sure that we're doing the best by our kids. Well, what could be more important than that?
Not much, not anything as far as we're concerned in PTA. So let's get right to our first question. It comes from Angela in Oklahoma. What is the best way to improve the nutrition found in our school lunches and incorporate fresh fruit and vegetables as part of the daily routine?
Well, the good news is that there's a new law that's focused on that, and we've actually revised the standards with respect to what the food is in school lunches to make sure that we're reducing the fat content, that we're increasing the presence of fruits and vegetables on the plates in front of our kids every day. So that's an incredibly important step. But if you follow the First Lady's efforts, for example, and her Let's Move campaign, what you'll see is that we're really trying to tackle this from a bunch of different perspectives. We're also trying to make sure that parents are as well informed as possible, can make the best possible choices, the best informed choices. There's a new initiative coming out of the U.S. Department of Agriculture called My Plate, which is a really useful tool which allows you to sort of picture what's in a healthy meal. I have found it very useful in talking to my high school age daughter about what constitutes good nutrition in the course of a day. I found it useful for myself. So there are tools available to help parents be as informed as possible, to be the best possible partners. There's healthier food in school lunches. And then on letsmove.gov, there's all kinds of information about initiatives to make sure that we get our kids moving, that we get ourselves moving, that we are leading the healthiest possible lives in this country.
And it's certainly an issue that we advocate very strongly for and join you in that effort. So let's move to the second question, which is from Kim in Missouri, and she would like to know, what can PTA members do to ensure that quality public education for all children and that education funding that both become national priorities? Education is critical to the long-term economic health and security of this country. Why don't our elected leaders seem to understand and act on that?
This is a great question, and this really speaks to one of the great policy challenges of the moment, because one of the things which will really make or break what we're able to accomplish in our school systems is what happens to the federal budget. The president has designed a federal budget and a proposal for the subsequent year, which I think is realistic about the fact that we're in tough economic times, but he's proposing that the government do what any family does during tough times, right? There are places where you have to tighten your belt, and sometimes that hurts, but you tighten your belt in the places where you can so that you can continue to invest in the future. So any family, like yours or mine, will maybe go out to eat less or go out to the movies less, but we'll still keep, you know, putting our nickels and dimes away to try to save for our kids' college education. The federal budget that the president is proposes to do the same thing, and particularly by making sure we invest in education, because that is essential to our country's economic future. And that is at risk because we are in a budget debate against an alternative approach proposed in the Congress by Congressman Ryan, which would have and I've got some notes in front of me to make sure I get the numbers right, which would cut $784 million to Title I programs for schools, would deny funding to 2,700 schools serving more than 1 million students. It affects more than 1,100 teachers in age. It affects special education. It would affect the ability to enroll maybe 6,000 children in the Head Start program. So these are very tangible things. You can measure them. You can count how many students and teachers in school systems are affected. And the answer really to the question of what can leaders in the PTA do is just to make sure that we understand the implications of the budget debate and that we're making sure that we extend that conversation around the country. There is a lot of educating that we ourselves can do to make sure our neighbors, our communities understand that this is critical stuff. This is pivotal to our future. It's pivotal to our kids. And the more of us that are engaged in that debate, the better informed that debate's going to be.
Absolutely. It's definitely a clarion call to action. Let's check the live Twitter feed, and I've got one here from Peggy. Parents want to know what Race to the Top holds for the future, for our children.
I love this question, too, because Race to the Top is something that we're really proud of because it's a really innovative approach to using federal resources to really spur reform, right? We know that 46 states have come forward with reforms as a result of the creation of this program, and these reforms are designed to make sure that states are setting high standards for our kids to achieve to, but are also measuring results in terms of how we close achievement gaps, how we make sure that every child is moving forward, and making sure that states are thinking about the right kinds of partnerships and the right kinds of innovations to make sure that we're making progress, that we're measuring the progress, that we're all being held accountable for the progress made in our schools. So that model has been so successful in spurring reforms in the K-12 system that we are now using the model in the early childhood education system as well. There's an early childhood Race to the Top program that we're using to both increase participation in early childhood programs but also increase the outcomes, and that's been so successful that we're now trying to use what the president has proposed, using the Race to the Top model in the higher ed context to make sure that we're leveraging federal resources to spur reforms that bring the cost of college down and make sure that you and I and our children as consumers have the best information so we can make good decisions about this enormous, enormous financial investment in a college education. So it's a model that has been shown some real success, and we're trying to use it to be successful all the way through the system from early childhood through college.
Which is perfect. Debbie from Texas asks, what is the administration doing to make college education a great follow-up, more affordable for our families?
This one's personal to me because I got one in college and another one will be there in a year. We owe more college debt in this country than we owe credit card debt in this country, and that is unacceptable. So the president, in his State of the Union address, and then again at a speech at the University of Michigan early this year, laid out a series of proposals for bringing college costs down, again, using the Race to the Top model, but also working with states, working with colleges and universities themselves, and making sure that the federal government is doing its part. So we have expanded. We've nearly doubled the Pell Grant program, which helps people go to college. The American Opportunity Tax Credit is this administration's initiative, which helps families in the middle class afford a college education. So the federal government is doing its part. We won a very important battle on keeping the student loan interest rate from doubling in July. But having said all of that, there's a lot more that we need to do. In September, it will become easier for students to use this system. It's a pay-as-you-earn system called income-based repayment for students who are managing their student debt, which will allow folks to apply so that they only have to pay 10% of their income in student loan bills. That's going to be a real help to students who are struggling with big payments that make it hard for them to save for a home, to get started on the right foot after their college careers. And we've been part of roundtables and conversations all around the country with colleges and universities about the role they have to play in keeping costs down. And in fact, we now have almost a couple hundred colleges representing almost 2 million students that have agreed to use a shopping sheet that the administration put out, which allows, again, as consumers, it allows us to make apples-to-apples comparisons between colleges about what's a loan, what's a grant, what is this really going to cost me, what are my loan payments going to look like, all to help better inform the decision about where to go to college, all of which can have the impact of driving costs down.
Which, having seen three children through college, to be able to have the shopping list and know what you're facing is tremendous. So we definitely applaud you for that piece that will really help all of our parents sending their children on to college.
It's so important. Thank you.
How can we make sure that we have teachers that encourage the deep thinking skills our kids really need?
This is a great question, too. I'm loving this conversation. So when we talk about reforms and we talk about closing the gaps and making sure that our students are achieving to high standards, this administration's approach is to make sure that we're trying to find ways to measure that and incentivize it in ways that are innovative. So one of my favorite examples of that is to make sure that we don't give short shrift to the arts or to physical education as part of an education that's going to produce well-rounded students, students who are prepared for life, students who are knowledgeable, who are skillful, but who are prepared and well-rounded. And so the kinds of reforms that the Race to the Top program, that we hope to produce with the Race to the Top program and with the kinds of incentives and innovation, there's an innovation fund that the administration has put forward. I visited a school last month that's using this fund and resources from this fund to do all kinds of exciting things in science, technology, engineering, and math. And it's a school that has a STEM program, a science technology program, in the same facility as an arts program. And they have found really wonderful ways to integrate those things. So that's the kind of approach that we're looking at, approaches where a student in a school is being given great skills and great knowledge, but is also we're trying to look at the whole student, the whole community.
Which is great, turning STEM into STEAM.
There you go.
Absolutely. Julie from New Hampshire, what can we do to attract more young, talented people into the teaching field?
This is a big priority for Secretary Duncan. When I first came into this role early this year, this was one of the first things that Secretary Duncan and I talked about. He is really on fire, and the president along with him, to be investing in the teaching profession as a profession. His view is it should be among the most honored and well-remunerated professions in the country, and there's a lot that we can do to make that happen. The president's budget proposes a $5 billion initiative that Secretary Duncan calls the Respect Initiative, which he's developed in consultation with teachers, which is about compensation, it's about building career paths, it's about making sure that we attract and keep the best and the brightest in the teaching field. The president has set a goal of finding and training 100,000 new STEM teachers again in science, technology, engineering, math, as part of this. And we recently had a really wonderful conversation about developing a master teacher core, especially in STEM, but that's a concept that we could extend to the broader teaching profession. So there are a lot of good ideas. We need some help in the Congress to get these ideas over the finish line. But if we're really going to be successful in training our young people and developing our young people for the needs of a 21st century economy and a globalized, this world that we live in that's increasingly complex, where technology is playing a larger role, a role that I certainly couldn't have imagined when I was in school, we need to make sure that we're investing in the teaching profession and that we recognize what a tremendous asset teachers are and how essential they are to our well-being as a country. And we need to and put our money where our mouth is and make those investments real and bear fruit in our educational system.
Absolutely. As the Parent Teacher Association, we most certainly support all of that. Kyle from Texas would like to know, how is the Obama administration going to handle the sanctions given to schools not being able to meet AYP but are showing student growth?
So adequate yearly progress is one of these sort of challenges from the No Child Left Behind law that is part of the reason that we have that the Secretary is inviting states to file for waivers, so that since we're having a struggle with Congress to pass the kinds of reforms that are needed to No Child Left Behind, that the Secretary has the authority to work with states in creative and innovative ways, in a way which allows for the states to, again, close the achievement gaps, to make sure that they're setting and being held to very high standards, but in ways that are not quite so restrictive. And again, as long as we're achieving to high results, there's the Secretary is working with the states in a flexible way to get there. And in the states that are receiving these waivers, and there are now 33 of them plus the District of Columbia, the sort of AYP barrier is less of a challenge, and we're focused much more on, again, making sure we get over the finish line and achieve to high standards together.
Excellent. Let's see what Amy from New Jersey wants to hear. She wants to ask, how can the Department of Ed and the PTA work together to address the issue of bullying in our schools?
Oh, this is a great question, too. Again, this is something that the President and the First Lady themselves have gotten involved in. We've held a summit here at the White House. The Department is doing some very important work. There is a internet resource called stopbullying.gov, which is a good place to get information about the role that we all have to play in making sure that bullying stops. So this means there are literally resources for teachers, for parents, for bus drivers. I think the approach that the Department of Education is taking is this notion that everybody has a role to play here. Students have a role to play here. This notion that you should feel empowered to speak up when you see it happening in your community. It extends to students, it extends to parents, it extends to the other adults that are sort of part of the system. So our challenge is to develop good resources that people can use, make them available, but to also, the department is really trying to use the platform that it has to make sure we're inspiring a national conversation about this so that we can sort of take it by its roots and yank it out of our system.
And it is an incredibly serious problem, and one that we do, and we have partnered and continue to work toward helping to solve it. I know we have referred many to the resources that that are offered by the administration, and we encourage community conversations through our Connect for Respect program as well.
That's terrific.
So it's huge for all of our parents. It's a grave concern. Well, let's see what Celia from Oklahoma asks. With the advent of Common Core standards and federal influence on education policy through Race to the Top, do you view the future of education as being guided by the federal government as opposed to state and local decision making?
I think we can only be successful if we're making sure we all work as partners. And so the federal government has a role to play to make sure that there are clear standards that everybody's driving towards. But we can't hope to be successful unless we're in a strong partnership with the states, unless we are doing as much listening, if not more listening, as we are, implementing policy and talking. The key to success is a partnership. That involves the federal government, that involves state and local governments, that involves parents, that involves students themselves. So I don't think we envision a heavier federal role. If anything, the way the Secretary is approaching education policy through these waivers, for example, of No Child Left Behind, is actually strengthening the partnership with states, basing our policy decisions much more on what we're hearing from state leadership and from leadership in school communities, and making sure that we provide the flexibility so that, we can do what works for each state and for each community. The goal here is to make sure our students are achieving. That our students are prepared. And I think there's a lot of flexibility on approaches to reaching that goal.
Well, unfortunately, we have time for just one final question. So, Molly from Kentucky asks, No Child Left Behind included mandated parent engagement in schools, yet that has not been enforced. Student success has many factors, but the number one factor is family or parent engagement. How can effective parent engagement policy become a part of our culture and part of our schools? What is the White House proposing to increase family engagement, which has been proven the greatest indicator of student success?
I believe that, and that certainly, I mean, I would not be working in the West Wing of the White House if it weren't for the role that my parents played in the education of my siblings and I. This is a president who understands that deeply. We have a Secretary of Education who understands that deeply. The administration has proposed a double funding for parent engagement under Title I. We've also called for a new Family Engagement and Responsibility Fund at the state level to create incentives for really effective strategies to make sure that we're maximizing and honoring parent engagement. There is a deep sense here that this is essential, that we have a lot of work to do. We understand that the status quo is really not acceptable. We have to be striving for better every day and in every corner of the country. And we're going to be more able to be successful if we're doing this together and if we're facilitating and strengthening the role that parents play in school systems and individual schools and in families all around the country. So there is a deep commitment here. We have proposed to put our money where our mouth is. But we need every pair of hands and every voice to lift up this conversation, not just in Washington, but all around the country, so that we have as many loud voices as possible in this conversation so that we can get this job done.
Well, we're excited to be able to work with you on that because we truly understand that the equation is simple. With an engaged family comes more successful children.
It's true.
So don't forget, all of you that are watching, for those of you at home, you can continue to send your questions on Twitter, and that's with hashtag WHPTA. We've answered a lot of questions that were on the minds of PTA members today, but sadly, we're out of time. I want to thank everyone who's watching at home, and to thank you, Cecilia, for taking the time out of your day to join us and to answer the questions that are so important to our families on the challenges they face in their schools and throughout their communities. PTA is very thankful for this wonderful opportunity and truly celebrates our partnership with you and your colleagues in improving the lives of our children and families. Later this afternoon, the White House will honor 12 extraordinary parents and teachers as champions of change. You will hear their inspiring stories and learn how these PTA members are working to achieve educational opportunity and equity for all students. I hope you'll join us for this special event starting at 2 p.m. right here on whitehouse.gov/champions. I'm Betsy Landers. Thank you again for participating today, for dedicating your time, your talent, and your voice to improve the lives of every child through advocacy and PTA.